So they put together a task force, and the task force focused its efforts because, you see, at this point, the very first scientist over at the NIH to take a look at this cluster, or the first 50 cases that showed up, once they started looking aggressively, they found more, and it turns out there had already been quite a number out there, but with increased surveillance, we now noticed them better. That some of the guys at the NIH began doing research and said, you know, maybe it's these poppers that these guys are using. Now, what are poppers? I mentioned those earlier. These are alkylated nitrites. They're amyl or butyl nitrites. They go under various street names, poppers, rush, death rush, locker room. They are liquids. They discovered over 100 years ago. They can be used for certain kinds of heart patients for relief of angina under emergency conditions. But basically, what these things are, they're very highly reactive volatile compounds. In the way they react chemically, they are similar to carbon monoxide or cyanide in that, and they have a fairly similar reactivity. If you inhale them, see the liquids evaporate and they're inhaled. Into the lungs and so forth, they will destroy everything. Hemoglobin, red blood cells, proteins, lipids, DNA, RNA, they mutate genes, they will cause cancer. They're related to compounds, also definitely proved to cause cancer in all kinds of laboratory animals. They're related to nitroxide compounds, which cause pneumonia in rats in the laboratories. Very, very serious stuff. When I've told chemistry professors about the fact that homosexuals, fast lane male homosexuals in the fast lane lifestyle were using these drugs, I've had twice now the reaction from chemistry professors, human beings are using that stuff? They couldn't believe it. It's extremely toxic, and you could easily, die with that kind of stuff. Anyway, it's used very widely has since been proven to destroy the T cells in mice, in laboratory mice, and deplete their immune systems in a way that's not unlike what happens in AIDS. There's a little bit of a lag time, and then finally when the mouse can't handle it, too much abuse, too many of these chemicals, and finally the immune system gives out, and the T cells disappear, and the mice lose their immune system. That's been proven. Nevertheless, so these NIH scientists were looking at that and saying, these poppers are an obvious candidate for what's going on. All of the first 50 AIDS cases, all of them admitted using poppers. Long-term, heavy amounts, 7 to 10 years on average, large doses, as many as 40 or 50 hits per night. Tremendous stuff. And you're talking about vast quantities of chemicals you're pouring in the body, and you're doing it several nights a week, 52 weeks a year, for 7 to 10 years. You do a lot of damage in that time if you survive and don't overdose. Now, the Centers for Disease Control recognized right away that they wanted this to be blamed on a virus. Their task force had as its goal to make it look like a new infectious disease rather than just a general problem of lack of health caused by certain drugs. So they went around and they could see it was in homosexuals. It was only showing up. These number of these odd diseases, not so odd diseases, but comparatively, showing up in these male homosexuals ages 25 to 50. So the CDC knew that they had to make it look like it's spreading out of its primary risk group. So they looked up heroin addicts in San Francisco and in New York, Central Park, dying of their heroin addiction, wasting away as heroin addicts always have done, and opium addicts, losing their immune systems. It's now been shown that heroin addicts will lose their immune systems progressively. If they get off the heroin, the immune systems can at least stabilize and sometimes begin to recover. It's the heroin, clearly, the opiates. And in any case, they found some of these who had tuberculosis or who had various forms of pneumonia, and they were called AIDS cases. So now you see this new disease, which had not yet been called AIDS, it had a different name at the time, was now spreading from the homosexuals to the heroin addicts. And then the next trick was to make it look like it was going through the blood supply. The CDC's task force combed the hospitals all around the country looking for hemophiliacs or blood transfusion recipients who had medical complications. And indeed, they often do. Just 25 years ago, the median life expectancy of a hemophiliac, a person who bleeds easily if cut, whose blood can't clot properly, the average life expectancy, or the median life expectancy, was about 11 years. That is to say, half of hemophiliacs were dead by age 11, very often of complications and pneumonias and other things associated with the blood disorder. That has gone up since HIV appeared on the scene, and now the median life expectancy is some 25 years, or almost 30. It's more than doubled since HIV. So, of course, one of the scientists involved, my co-author, Dr. Duesberg, jokes that HIV actually prolongs the life of hemophiliacs, HIV being the alleged AIDS virus. In any case, The hemophiliacs and blood transfusion recipients, I should mention that blood transfusions are given to people who are very, very sick. This should never be forgotten. We don't just give it to you on a basis like a federally subsidized lunch in the schools, or at least we shouldn't be. If you're getting a blood transfusion, you're in serious, serious bad shape already. As an average, nationwide, 50% of people who receive blood transfusions die within the first year, very often from pneumonias and immune deficiency complications. That's without HIV. Turns out now with studies, it's the same with HIV as without, so that there's no difference at all. You simply have a high risk of these kinds of diseases when you have these kinds of disorders. Well, the CDC searched the hospitals and finally found a hemophiliac patient in Colorado who was dying of internal bleeding, of hemophilia. But he also happened to have a pneumonia, which they called pneumocystis. It's not clear if it was or not, but they called it that. Thereby, he became the first patient to receive AIDS through the blood supply, as if there was something in the blood rather than just his condition itself causing his sickness. So now, AIDS, you see, had spread through the blood supply. There was one more little piece that was thrown in for good measure. At least one member of the task force was sent down to Miami, Florida, and to Port-au-Prince, Haiti, to interview Haitians who were suffering from malnutrition and, like so many people from the third world, suffering tuberculosis and even advanced tuberculosis. Thus, tuberculosis was now added to the growing AIDS definition, and at this point now Haitians were reclassified in large numbers as being AIDS patients. So now AIDS had spread to the Haitians. Later, the story was changed so that AIDS had spread originally from the Haitians to us. So the story keeps changing, but the bottom line is it was made to look as if it had spread.